All right, let's take it national. Live on Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver and Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. This hour of Real Kipper and Bourne is brought to you by Bet365, Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee. In the next few minutes, we'll welcome in Frank Saravelli, Hockey Insider, President of Hockey Content, Daily Faceoff. Also on board in about half an hour, we'll talk to Alan May, my former teammate in Washington, and now doing a terrific job breaking things down for the Monumental Sports Network, covering those surprisingly good Washington Capitals.
They are surprisingly good.
The reason I texted Alan today is because watching the start of the season for Ovechkin, I think we all have to prepare ourselves for a potential of this happening this year.
This year. So he would have to have a 40-goal season.
I mean, he's on fire.
It's completely reasonable.
It's within the realm of possibility here. So that was the reason I wanted to track him down. It's like, what are they planning? What's going on here? Like, maybe they're starting to scramble around, be like, oh, God, he's actually getting hot here, and they look good. So it's interesting to me. Anyways.
It is going to be interesting.
Well, there was a feeling in the last year and a half, based on his numbers, that it was slowing down. And Washington made the decision to not pause, but actually build. And it looks pretty good right now.
And they haven't even really had Matt Roy, who is like their big offseason D signing. I think he's only played one game this season. So their underlying numbers are way better. Their team is way better than it was last year. And kudos to the effort made by, is it Brian McClellan there still? No.
Brian McClellan's still involved.
Yep. He's the president, though, but there's, and someone else. Anyway, they've done a good job.
I know we got Frank coming on, but at some point I want to talk about your article on sportsnet.ca. I caught it out of the corner of my eye. I'm planning on reading it tonight, but I already can tell you I'm fascinated by it because it's based on
the show.
The fact that we've got 32 teams now in the NHL and not all of them could be filled out with bona fide NHL players.
No, sir.
So it is basically an article on a watered down product, correct?
Well, yeah, it is. It is. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Check it out.
All right. Okay. Let's welcome in Frank Saravelli, dailyfaceoff.com. Frank, thanks for joining us, man. So listen, there always seems to be this pause in the NHL between training camp and somewhere, maybe American Thanksgiving or after that, where everybody feels like they got a terrific roster. They drafted well, their prospects are ready for the next step. And then at some point reality sets in and they all look at each other in a room going, okay, we ain't that good, man. We got to go get some help. And that's when you get busier. So are we at that point, Frank, where teams know what they've had coming out of training camp and we'll start seeing some teams maybe move some bodies?
Yeah, Kipper, now that we've gotten to November and the calendar has turned, I think really now the urgency for a few teams ramps up. Now, it's really interesting, though, because of the conversations that you just talked about, I talked to one general manager last week who was working the phones trying to improve his team. I said, well, what are you looking for? He said, to get better. And I said, no, I get that. But what is it that you're looking for? He goes, oh, I'll know it when I see it. And he wasn't playing coy as to not give me information. You know what those calls are like. It's trying to get blood from a stone. Not possible. But in this case, I actually checked in with some other managers who I thought that he might have called. And I said, well, what is he looking for? They said, I don't know. He just went through like just about every guy on my list and on my team and was like, hey, is this guy available? Is this guy available? Point being, there's a handful of teams right now that are feeling the pressure that need and know that they need to get better. But it's difficult to make moves at this exact juncture because there's a few teams that really like what they have too.
Yeah, you know, when I sort the league by points percentage, I can talk myself into the top sort of eight teams and be like, yeah, that shakes out. You know, I could see those teams being playoff teams. But then you go to the very bottom of the league and there's the Colorado Avalanche, the New York Islanders, and the Nashville Predators. Those are three pretty good teams that I think a lot of people saw as playoff teams this year. Do you see those teams getting desperate enough to actually get active and make moves soon?
I see three teams, all three of them for totally different reasons, Justin, kind of handcuffed.
Yeah.
I mean, the Islanders are more or less locked in with what they have. They haven't just doubled down or tripled down. They've quadrupled down over the last four off seasons with their group. If anything, with the Islanders, and I don't even know that this is in Lou Lamoriello's DNA, I could see them going the other way at the trade deadline if this continues. Might have to say goodbye to Brock Nelson or Kyle Palmieri, who, by the way, have had pretty much the only two really positive starts to their season. Mm-hmm. The Colorado Avalanche went into this year as the biggest wild card in the NHL. They had serious cap space limitations by virtue of Gabriel Landeskog and Val Nichushkin's uncertainty and when they'd be back. Nichushkin practicing today, eligible to return to the lineup on November 15th if he receives his final clearances. And then on top of that, because of those contracts and because they couldn't go out and spend that money, entered with a really thin roster, and then the issue was compounded with the injuries that they had. The Nashville Predators went out and spent a whole pile of money this offseason. But what I'm really struck with was a conversation that I had almost one calendar year ago with Barry Trotz. It was at Hall of Fame weekend in Toronto. I had him on my podcast, and we were talking about the build process of the Preds. He said, you know, as we look at it on paper now, we're thinking maybe 3 years from now is when we'd be back into a competitive cycle and have a chance to win. All of a sudden, they go on a heater last year, they make the playoffs, and then they go and add three massive pieces in Marchessault, Stamkos, and Shea, and they're going, well, holy smokes, we should be now in the mix because we've added them, and you just don't get to snap your fingers and go from team that was in rebuild mode to playoff team, and then all of a sudden vault yourself into the inner circle of Stanley Cup contenders. That's not how it happens. This isn't Major League Baseball. You don't buy yourself a World Series. Right. Although, like the Dodgers can, the Yankees can, you can't buy yourself a Stanley Cup.
So just sticking to the East, I'm quite fascinated at this start because it appears that the Rangers and Carolina are where we thought they would be, and that would be in all the class of the Metro.
I'm going to stop you there, actually, because I wasn't sure on Carolina.
You weren't, eh?
I mean, they said goodbye to some really good pieces. Yeah. Brett Pesce, Brady Shea, up front, no more Jake Guentzel. I thought they'd take a bit of a step back this year, maybe 5, 6, 7 points, be a good team and a playoff team, but 8-2
okay.
To start.
So meaning class, there no real threat of them missing the playoffs, right?
In the
Atlantic, it seems like right now Florida's kind of pushed themselves right at the top. Whether they stay there remains to be seen. Tampa's right behind them. And then you get into that one game over or even or one game under 500. There's just a clump of them. So, and we got Toronto and Boston in the mix. Ottawa's in the mix. So where do you see this? Do you see it as what we thought maybe could be a 4-4 from each division turn into a 5-3? What have the Washington Capitals done to really throw a wrench into that? Because we think New Jersey's still going to be there. We all thought they were going to make the playoffs this year. Did we not?
Yeah, I had New Jersey there, and the Caps I saw as a firm playoff team by virtue of the changes that they made in the offseason. The amazing thing about their start, and not just Alex Ovechkin turning back the clock with goals in 4 straight, has been that they've accomplished all of this and play with a really structured style. I think Spencer Carberry has done an unbelievable job in Washington. They've done it all without Matt Roy. Huge free agent signing. I would argue the best pure defender in the free agent class. He's played 8 minutes and 39 seconds so far this season, 2 periods and out. He's getting closer to a return, and that should further boost a Caps team that's been really stingy to play against so far this season. They've given up way fewer shots than most other teams, and they've had important steps forward. I heard you guys talking about them on my way in from some of their younger guys, Connor McMichael, Hendrix LaPierre. Those guys have all taken a big step forward, which has been huge for Washington. But to size up the Atlantic, I still think the Leafs are going to find a consistent stretch and probably pull away from that clump of teams. But after that, I kind of see it as absolute pure chaos. I think there's a real chance that for the first time in almost a decade, we have a division where all 8 teams finish with 80 or more points. Wow. So essentially, basically everyone's 500 or more. And where does the chaos come in? Well, any team that goes on a three-game losing streak, you're going to see tons of panic in each market, because all of a sudden you don't go from, you know, third or fourth. You go from third or fourth place all the way down to seventh or eighth. And it's going to be a big swing either way. I think that Boston will find a way to also normalize a bit. But that last chunk of teams, it's going to be a dogfight all year, I think, in terms of trying to avoid the roller coaster and the fits and starts of an NHL season.
Okay, one of those teams, obviously, in the mid is the Boston Bruins. We saw their superstar Pastrnak get benched for an entire period. What are your sources saying? What do you know behind the scenes of that story?
Well, naturally, we're going to make a bigger deal out of this than the Boston Bruins will. You know that's the case. The one thing that really stood out to me, and I compare it solely to Leon Draisaitl getting benched a couple weeks ago in Edmonton, the big difference is it's one thing to have a player sit out for a few rotations like Draisaitl did, and it's another for an entire period. And I know that I'm sure there were previous conversations with Pastrnak in terms of what exactly Jim Montgomery is looking for, the non-negotiables. And I'm sure the turnovers that occurred on Sunday were certainly not within the boundaries of what's acceptable. That said, it did feel like kind of a large punishment for a guy that still finds a way to really impact the game. I mean, go back and look at their power play goal that they scored in the first period against the Kraken. He doesn't end up on the score sheet. He doesn't get a point, but there's three Kraken players draped on him in the front of the net, which allows Charlie Coyle to get the puck and score. So even as someone who plays a bit of a deceptive role or a guy that can pull opponents away from your other players, he still is serving a big purpose for the Bruins. And yes, the start may have not been perfect for Pastrnak, but I think kind of maybe a little bit of a heavy hand from Jim Montgomery that I think everyone's been feeling the heat there. And yet Boston comes through with back-to-back wins 2-0 on the weekend.
You know, if you feel like your job's in jeopardy, a lot of coaches go, I'm going to do it my way and we'll see if this works or see if it doesn't work, whatever, but doing it my way.
Justin, I've heard a bunch of coaches say, if I'm going to get fired, I might as well go out on my own terms. Exactly like that.
Yeah, no, it makes sense to me. And I don't know that he's at that point, but you can see mentally him being like, well, let's start trying to do it my way because it's not working. Looking at some teams around the league, well, just start with Toronto. So Toronto trades Timothy Liljegren. It just doesn't seem like Liljegren's a Berube guy, you know, and doesn't have the build or the type. Nick Robertson fits that mold too. It feels like if someone's going to get traded in Toronto, he's the next guy to go. There have to be some other players around the league, I would imagine, who are in similar boats where it's like, this guy's footing with his team is not all that solid. Do you think Robertson is a potential name to get moved? And are there other names around the league that you're hearing frequently in trade rumors?
Yeah, so Robertson is certainly the guy that I would circle on that list in terms of choices that the Leafs have to make with their roster in the coming days. We know that the clock is ticking on the conditioning stints for Hakanpää and Connor Dewar. They're chock full at 23 men on the roster right now. The only person that has waiver exemption, of course, is Matthew Nyes, and he's not going anywhere. So it's either waivers or trade. And I can tell you that there was at least one team locked in on Nick Robertson well deep into training camp that the Leafs felt like they could have made a move if they needed to. So I'd be curious to see if that team is still ready, willing, and able to make a move. And to answer the other part of your question, yeah, I think there's a few players around the league it's kind of wait and see mode, but I'll give you an example. The Seattle Kraken. They have a situation right now. Vince Dunn is on LTIR. When he gets off, they're probably going to have to move a forward. And two names that have popped up repeatedly in discussions and talks are Brandon Tanev and Yanni Gourde. Yanni Gourde's off to a tough start this season. No goals, 3 assists in, I believe, 12 games, something like that. So he's struggled. His minutes are down 2.5 to 3 minutes a game off of last season. He's someone that has certainly a ton of experience, valuable experience in the NHL. And the Kraken haven't seemed like they're interested in moving him just yet. And the same kind of goes for Tanev. Both these guys are pending unrestricted free agents, so you'll hear their names a lot throughout the course of the rest of the year should they remain there. But Seattle wants to get better and quicker, and Tanev's a guy that impacts their forecheck, so you don't really want to remove him, but I don't know. We'll see. They've got decisions to make as well.
We're talking to Frank Cervelli, Hockey Insider with Daily Faceoff. So if we're to talk out west in terms of shoring up a blue line, is it Vancouver or Edmonton that strike first? What are you hearing from those two clubs in their search maybe for a defenseman?
Well, if it's strike first, the answer would clearly be Vancouver. One, the Edmonton Oilers were accruing cap space prior to the McDavid injury. I think they're not right now, but they were beginning to bank space. And ultimately, I think the play would be for Stan Bowman and Jeff Jackson and company to hang on as long as they can and continue to accrue space, and then at the deadline, pull the trigger on a more sizable impact transaction on the back end. The Canucks, we know from their profile in Patrick Alvin that he continues to call around the league, try and find the pieces possible to put in the lineup to improve that team from an efficiency standpoint and moving the puck on their back end. He's the most aggressive GM in the league, bar none. That said, they do want to see what this team looks like with their full complement for the first time. Dakota Joshua nearing his return, Derek Forbort as well. And once Forbort and Joshua get in the lineup, then the Canucks can begin to kind of tinker a bit. But make no mistake, Patrick Alvin's been working the phones. That's been a very top of Rick Tocchet's wish list, is more efficiency, getting the puck out of their own end. Speaking of non-negotiables, that's it. Outside of their first pair, they don't really do it very well because there's a bunch of limitations on the guys further down their lineup.
Frank, if you're going to make a coaching change in the NHL, you kind of have to do it early enough in the season where there's enough games left to right the ship. And you don't want to do it too early because you kind of got to see how things are going. That means you kind of enter a coach firing season partway through the year. I don't know. Do you think we're getting kind of close to that? And if so, where are the hot seats around the league? I mentioned Montgomery. He could be a potential name. Are there others?
You know, I've seen a few talked about that I think are absolutely ridiculous. So let me start with them and kind of cross those off. And in Chicago, Kyle Davidson actually addressed that one today with Luke Richardson, calling it, quote, ridiculous, and would totally agree. There seemed to be some chatter out of Montreal. What happens with Marty St. Louis as the Habs continue to struggle in a year in which they expected to take a step forward? Not happening. The coaching staff and the front office are in lockstep together, and I think this is more of a roster construction issue, not to blame on the front office, but just a few players, particularly on their back end, that just aren't ready to take the full step forward yet. And they're in this awkward period between, hey, do we go out and support these guys now and trade for something when we're really not ready? That doesn't really seem to be a path that they want to go down either. I would say Derek Lalonde in Detroit, there's been tons of kind of smoke around that for, it seems like, a while now, stretching back into last season. They need to see results on the Iser plan. I would say that he's probably on that list somewhere. We just touched on Jim Montgomery. I do think that seat was starting to sort of, it was, you know, level one on the old car heat seat setting. It was not like level two or three, but certainly kind of just warming up a little bit. But outside of that, I'm not really seeing a ton else in terms of action on the coaching front.
Frank, if we go behind the bench and take the stairs up to the front office, where are we with a guy like Kevin Adams in Buffalo?
What about Lou?
I think and Lou Lamoriello with the Islanders, JB just mentioned.
Yeah, I struggle with the Lou question because I don't really know how to answer it. I mean, 82 years old, same thing that we've seen, just banging your head against the wall, trying to have this team break through. And yet we're not seeing results. And now we're also running into some significant injuries. I mean, this is a team with a talent differential relative to the rest of the NHL that is certainly not in the Islanders' favor on most nights. And then you take Matt Barzal out of the lineup. That's not easy. So I think it's a fair question to ask. When it comes to Kevin Adams, this is year five. I think he understands the pressure that he's facing. His predecessor in Jason Botterill only got 3 years and he was out. Kevin Adams, I don't know. Someone's going to need to explain the Lindy Ruff decision to me a little bit more, like I'm 5 years old, because you talked in such a great point, Justin, about you know, the time to make a coaching change. The Devils are the perfect example. They waited too long last year. Mm-hmm. They played incredibly sloppy, made the same mistakes time after time, and yet they waited until their season was more or less over before making the coaching change with Lindy Ruff. And the Sabres turn around and say, hey, we watched the Devils this year, yet we're going to hire Lindy Ruff, and we're not going to interview anyone else. So I'm not understanding that, and I think watching the Sabres team, who I think is loaded with talent. By the way, full disclosure, I picked the Sabres to make the playoffs this year.
Me too. Hey, there's someone else. I didn't know.
I'm not a Sabres hater, but I can't watch this team with how sloppy they play, and they're not improving defensively. They have not found a way to defend, which I don't know that you can just – can you go trade for that, or is that an overall team mindset, structure, and mentality?
Got to get a question about goaltending in New York. No team depends on one goalie more than the New York Rangers and Shesterkin. Is there any movement? It's so quiet in terms of where his contract is going, and every day that goes by that he's not signed is making Ranger fans very nervous, Frank.
Well, you knew that the information clampdown was coming once it was reported that he declined the Rangers' massive offer, and totally understand it to that point. But I also feel like in talking to people in and around the Rangers organization that they feel like they're in a pretty good position. They don't see a huge reason, even though he's super important and even though a lot of their success does hinge on Igor Shesterkin, it's still going to be really difficult to beat their offer. And you could create or bake any kind of conspiracy theory that you want that, oh, he's going to end up going to a no state tax team. And everyone says, wink, wink, the Vegas Golden Knights in the summer, if he goes to market, it's still a 7-year deal. And right now the Rangers to match $88 million, you need to go 7 times 12.57. That's a massive jump from 11 flat, which is why I think the Rangers are in a pretty solid position, and will they move? I'm sure they'll move a little bit, but they have been super clear since the start of this process that there is a limit in terms of what they're willing to offer because they need to pay the rest of their team. And I understand that from their perspective as well.
Last one for me, Frank. There's a couple of wingers that have contracts coming up, Mitch Marner being one, Kirill Kaprizov another. Are you hearing anything on either of these guys? These guys were talking on the panel last night about Kaprizov getting paid $369 billion, or I forget the exact figures, but it was a lot of money thrown around.
Yeah, I mean, he's gone to the Sam Reinhart school of how to have a contract year.
Yeah, because he's done well.
It's unbelievable how well Kaprizov has played. I know last night his point streak ended, but he's been phenomenal, and he's a guy that's dragged that Minnesota Wild team into the fight on a night-to-night basis. I haven't heard anything in terms of their contract discussions. I don't think there's any concern from the Wild standpoint. They're like, we're paying this guy whatever it takes to keep him. He's probably going to eat up a huge chunk of their Parise Suter buyout money that's about to come off the book. So as good of a feeling as that is, they also know that they're devoting a part of that to Kirill Kaprizov. And Marner, no, I think it's been rather quiet on that front.
Frank, great stuff. I know we packed a ton in for you, but as always, you come through with flying colors for us. Thanks for doing this, man.
Good to see you guys.
Yeah, thanks, Frank.
Frank Cervelli. DailyFaceoff.com.
Takeaways?
Lindy Ruff was weird.
Lindy Ruff
the
was
hiring?
Weird.
Yeah.
But that's just a relationship that's comfortable with an old pair of shoes.
Hmm.
Yeah.
But not interviewing anyone else. Like, just, I don't know.
There was a time when the Islanders were just like giving some alumni the opportunity to interview for a coaching job. Just kind of it was low time for the Islanders. And Clark Gillies was one of them. He gave Lindy Ruff the like questionnaire to fill out, and Lindy filled it out flying colors, and Clark ended up getting an NHL coaching job interview based purely on Lindy's answers.
Wow.
Which is actually even a funny way to interview for a head coach to begin with. But anyway, so I got a lot of love for Lindy.
Whatever works.
Whatever works. The one in Detroit, though, Lalonde.
Lalonde, yeah.
I've heard that that's getting people are where we're hoping for more progress by now.
Yes, I think he's got himself in a position here where I don't think anything's kind of imminent.
No.
But they got to make a little bit of a move here. Do you think, like, we have seen some teams go on some heaters. We're going to see a team get on a 7 or 8 game winning streak here soon? Like, is someone going to
Carolina, 6 in a row?
Run with it?
Carolina 6 in a row, Florida 5 in a row is as hot as it get in the NHL right now.
But that's what Detroit needs.
Yeah. One of these teams, right? In the middle pack.
Somebody needs one. Is it the Leafs on the cusp? The Bruins have gotten 2 in a row. That's a huge game Tuesday night against the Toronto Maple Leafs.
You know what is fascinating is, like, the Oilers getting 2 wins in a row with McDavid out. You know, we've seen it here in Toronto tons. Riley gets suspended 5 games. All they do is
win. Yeah. But Draisaitl is very comfortable.
He's good.
Carrying.
He's quite a good hockey player.
A team on his shoulders when McDavid's not there.
Should just never play them together. I know they often don't, but.
I would allude to something like that in game time.
Oh, good.
It's game time. Visit our Bet365. Visit the app, play us odds, and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly. Now, what I was trying to do on Friday before my phone malfunctioned was look at some of the futures for the awards. And we were talking about Nikita Kucherov. I think that was in the break. We were talking about Nikita Kucherov and how good he's been this year. The favorites for the Hart Trophy this year. Nikita Kucherov is the favorite at plus 325. Cooch. Connor McDavid is still the second favorite at plus 350.
McJesus.
Which is actually...
Coochie-coo.
A bit of coochie-coo. Shout out my boy David. I heard that. I was sipping tea and I spit it out when he said that. Connor McDavid at plus 350 is pretty good value, considering there's already talk about him coming back this weekend and eventually he'll get hot. Kirill Kaprizov, plus 450. MacKinnon, plus 500. Panarin, McCarr, and Austin Matthews at plus 1400. And then it goes up to Eichel at plus 25. And Draisaitl, plus 2000. So
MacKinnon looks really good, Tim, yeah. With McCarr. Like, if they drag that Colorado team into playoffs, either of those guys has a real chance at winning the Hart.
McCarr is interesting at 12-1 to me.
Yeah.
And the Norris Trophy, it is Cale McCarr is a minus 140 favorite at this point. Adam Fox, next closest, plus 550. Quinn Hughes, plus 750. Evan Bouchard is plus 1,200, and then it kind of goes up from there.
I might bet that McCarr number.
It's not going to get worse. And the Rocket Richard Trophy, still the favorite, Austin Matthews.
Yeah. Plus, really?
Plus 140.
Is so he on still pace think, for, what, 35?
They still
crushed
think,
it.
He's there's many stretches in his career where you just absolutely feel like this guy's a goal-a-game guy,
yep.
Right?
And there's many stretches where he's a two-goal-a-game
guy. And now
he
can't score in a soccer net right now.
And the last thing I wanted to bring up, to make the playoff odds, we were talking about the Boston Bruins, and will they make the playoffs in the first one?
Playoffs?
They are a minus 160 favorite to make the playoffs. If you don't think they're going to make the playoffs, it's plus 130 right now. So the books still favor them as a playoff team.
To me, I know it's early. It's only like 12, a dozen games, 13 games. But for me, it's shaping up to Ottawa or Boston.
It is. Detroit could sniff around, but it's Ottawa or Boston for me, too.
I think the scoring of the Ottawa Senators is certainly woken me up a little bit the last week and a half, 2 weeks.
The Senators are minus 105.
To make
the playoffs.
They're now favored to make the playoffs. Sens fans, you hear it.
Bet365 believes in you way more than I do.
They have 12 and 13 points, Boston and Ottawa.
Yeah.
But Boston is a minus 8 goal differential. Ottawa's plus 9.
Yeah.
That goal differential tends to work out. If you're a plus team, you tend to get in.
It's one of the most telling stats.
It's crazy. You sort the league at playoff time, and it's like the 16 teams who are in,
and didn't
usually plus, just barely.
Wasn't Washington big time minus?
Minus 37, mid playoff.
That's insane. Anyways, that was game time presented by Bet365. Visit the app, latest odds, to find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. It's 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly.
So the curveball for me is the Washington Capitals.
Mm-hmm.
They hold their spot in the Metro and get in.
Competitive division, boys.
Right?
A lot of good teams.
Then it puts basically Florida, Tampa, and Toronto in the Atlantic, and then you're left with the Bruins and the Senators.
Yeah, No, it does feel like they have improved enough that this is a playoff Capitals team. And I think a really good point by Frank was Connor McMichael and Alexei Protas have been major surprises, both with 12 and 11 points, you know, double-digit points,
yeah.
Which, I mean, that makes it, it's like free money finding those
guys. We'll find out how major they've been when we come back with Alan May, Capital Analyst with Monumental Sports Network, and the increasingly stronger odds of Ovechkin breaking Gretzky's record as early as this season. That and more when we return to Real Kipper and Born.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan Pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Last block, this hour, Real Kipper and Bourne, brought to you by Bet365. As promised, let's bring in Alan May, Capitals analyst with Monumental Sports Network and former NHLer, teammate of mine, and a real happy guy because his Washington Capitals, the team that he covers, is 8-3, and Ovi's like old Ovi or new Ovi. I don't know, but he's got 7 goals. He's on pace for 52 Mayday, and this guy ain't slowing down.
Well, he's refreshed, Ovi, because already every single game he's played this season was better than what he was last year. And last year, he just didn't have it. He didn't have his legs, but I was really worried. He didn't have a shot for the majority of the year. He wasn't making great passes. It seemed like he lost his hands. And I know that after his father had passed away, he had never been the same stats-wise. I think the offseason was something he really needed. The mental, the emotional, the physical commitment are all back to the normal levels I'm used to with Ovechkin. And his line with Strome and Protas has been doing everything and defensively responsible. And Ovi's been leading the way in the back check and just little plays that we hadn't seen in the past. I've been really impressed with his overall attitude and execution of everything. But the line, one of the kids that doesn't get enough, I think, attributes around the league, or I'm probably use a better word for that, but Dylan Strome has been killing it all season long. He's been an incredible Washington Capital in his short time here.
So, Alan, the Caps are a really positive surprise, I think. Not surprising, their playoff team last year, but far better than last season. What do you have as the main reasons for what appears to be such a drastic improvement over the summer?
Well, I'm not throwing shade at you two guys because I love you both, but a lot of the media that I did here over the offseason, they didn't notice the June that the Capitals had, the July that they had. They didn't go out and act like they won the Stanley Cup. They didn't have a parade on, you know, July 2nd. What they did do is they went out and they put together a very methodical roster of how they wanted to place players. It was a gamble on Pierre-Luc Dubois, but we saw him play at Columbus, and he was always a very good all-around player. I thought he played well in Winnipeg as well, but last year everything was out of kilter in Los Angeles. So I think by bringing him in here, he's fit in so well with Tom Wilson and Connor McMichael. What an incredibly complete line that is. Dubois is not putting up the points like McMichael and Wilson are right now, but he's got puck possession. He's bodying everyone off the puck. And when you look how they were able to build this roster, the fourth line, Taylor Radish, 20 goals 2 years ago in Chicago. Last year, the only person that seemed, well, maybe there's three guys that had decent numbers in Chicago with Bedard. There's a couple other players. But you look at that. He's been very well on that fourth line with Nick Dowd. And then Brandon Duhaime brings a lot of what Nick did when he played. It was a guy that finishes his hits. He can notch a goal here and there. He'll fight. He'll drop the gloves. He'll do what he has to. So you got some more sandpaper in Duhaime on that line. But I thought they were very methodical. The fact that they're 8-3 without Chipper, who's been like a left-handed John Carlson, and Matt Roy was injured in the first period of the first game, to be where they're at right now, I think is very, very good. And this team will only get better as the season goes on. And they build even more confidence within the dressing room, which they're carrying out onto the ice.
How close is Matt Roy coming back? And what does that mean to Charlie Lindgren, who's coming off of a pretty good season last year, and the fact that Logan Thompson's there now?
Well, the biggest thing, Matt Roy, I think he's going to play this week in the next few days. I wouldn't be surprised if he plays Wednesday. And Dylan McElrath has filled in incredibly well and, you know, sent a lot of messages around the league with that fight with Matt Rempe, but he's kept his game simple. Matt Roy is one of the best defensemen in the National Hockey League analytically when it comes to defensive defensemen. Outlet passes are excellent, so he's going to bolster the lineup. And when you look at Charlie Lindgren and Thompson, they're both winning their games. And yesterday, Charlie Lindgren was put in a tough spot. I thought the Caps lost. They ran out of gas in the second period against the Carolina Hurricanes after probably using too much fuel in that game against Columbus in the first period the night before. But, you know, the goaltending, it looks like it's going to be a true 1-2 punch all year. I don't know who the one and who the two is, so we're going to go 1A and 1A plus. But right now, everything's going well for the Capitals. They're killing penalties at a great rate. The power play is a work in progress, but I always say if you're dependent on your power play to win games, you're in trouble. You've got to win 5-on-5. And one of the things that the Caps are executing very well this season, 5-on-5. And they don't have to dumb it down like they did last year. Last year, for my job of covering this team every single night, I had to bite my tongue a lot because it was pretty tough to watch, even when they were winning. When they won a close game, you know, 90% of the time. When they lost bad. It felt like 90% of the time. And that made for that horrible goal differential. But at the same time, they knew what they had to do to win games. They've taken what they learned last year defensively. I thought they've gotten a little bit better so far this season. But now they're able to unleash the dogs and create offense, because you see what the young guys are doing in Protass and McMichael. They're blazing. They're lighting it up. They're going up and down the ice with a lot of speed and a lot of confidence and finding, you know, ways to score goals and create offense.
So the head coach there is a University of Anchorage alumni. Go Seawolves. So you know he's a brilliant man like myself. tell us about Spencer Carberry's role in the success of this Washington Capitals team.
You know what I love about Spencer, and first and foremost, as a former player, it's not that he went to University of Alaska all the way up, but it's the fact that the way he communicates with the players and he communicates with the press, the players buy everything he's selling because he doesn't lie to them. He's very positive. He gives them a roadmap of how to play. And then in the press, he brags them up when they win. And when they lose, it's a short 1.5, 2 minute presser. Doesn't ever throw anyone under the bus. There's a lot of coaches in the National Hockey League that love to throw their players under the bus. That creates animosity because it goes against what you're saying in the room and in the office, on the plane, wherever it is, to your players. And then you're throwing them under the bus. So I think the biggest thing, the honesty, the passion, the conviction that he's had. Last year, when they had those tough losses, he wasn't burying guys. He was trying to find a way with his coaching staff to amplify the players at what they do well and what they needed to correct. So an incredible communicator, an excellent tactician, as are the guys on his bench, because they've taken what they've got for a roster this year and they've upgraded everything they've done. Last year, he had to, you know, figure it out on the fly. This team's not very fast. It's not scoring goals. This year, he's got a team that's fast and can score goals, and it's pretty big. It's about, I'm not sure, I think they're the third largest team in the National Hockey League. All the players they brought in on free agency, of the seven guys, six of the guys were 6'2 or plus. Mangiapane, the small guy, is the most noticeable hard worker every single night. And so they brought in a great group of players, and I think they're playing more of a big brand of hockey.
We're talking to Alan May, Capitals analyst for Monumental Sports Network. I want to switch it back to Ovi a little bit here. And just in terms of what's in store as he gets ever so closer to Wayne Gretzky's record here, Alan, and I assume he's been focused right from the get-go. There's nobody that wants this record more than Ovi to end after this season. He does not want to go into a summer of having it hang over his head. So where does that put the Washington Capitals in terms of the prep work to build up to this? Has it changed because it's a lot more likely that it will happen this year with a 52-goal pace than it would have been what we thought at the beginning of the season? How has the landscape changed as we prepare for this?
Well, the biggest thing right now is I haven't heard, you know, if he's asked the question about the goal-scoring record, he said, yes, I do want to have it. But at the same time, he'll always finish that sentence or that statement with, we want to have success. We want to be a better team. We want to have playoff success. So when you look at it from inside the dressing room, the players have all been focused on winning games. And what he's doing right now is bonus. And his fact is being, did not want him to go out and end his career these last few years on a limb. I want him to go out for his sake, for our sake, for the game's sake, to go out skating like he is and playing like he is. As far as the team is concerned, they've had plans in place for a couple of years. The way we market on our broadcast, you know, my network is now owned by the team. We're not muted. They don't force us to say anything. I'm still allowed to have my opinions. And my opinion is I hope that when we get to that record, and Ovechkin, if he is able to do it this season, that it's on a night that we're broadcasting. ESPN and TNT tried to handicap late in the season and take a bunch of our games. You know, they can take, in the States, I think it's 12 or 13 games. So they took 12 games. They took a bunch of us early, and at the end, it's going to load up again in that last part of March and early part of April. So on our air, selfishly, I know all, regardless of whose air it's on, but there's a lot of plans in place. Right now, we show every night the OB watch, every night that he scores, we highlight that. But the biggest thing is it's a lot more fun covering this team when they're winning. And, you know, no matter what, because in the States, it's a way different relationship you have with your fan and your regional networks. And it's we don't bury our players. We highlight the game. We look for positives. And we don't have to find a villain, because hockey season ends after the last game and it doesn't start until the first game in the States. It's not crazy all the time like it is back home in Canada. And, you know, they're checking in who's doing what on their vacation and everything. Here, when hockey starts, officially preseason doesn't start the cap season. Opening night starts it for them when it comes to coverage of the team. And so it's a lot different relationship. People are coming to our games. It's a thrill for them every night. The team's a lot better. Last year was very painful. This year has been spectacular every single night.
Well, listen, I don't know how many people had the Washington Capitals making the playoffs at the beginning of the season, but I imagine that 8-3 to start, it would be a big disappointment if they miss it at this point for you.
Well, it would. And the only way I think that happens if they had a catastrophic injury problem. And I really did. In every show that I had done this summer, every talk show, right until today, I felt that they would make the playoffs, and they would be first or second in the Metro when it was all said and done. Because when you look at the roster, the way they put the roster together, guys, they plugged in pieces. You know, when the New England Patriots were doing well, you know, they were plugging players into the proper place. Then you have the growth of these younger players like Connor McMichael. All of a sudden, is an every night NHL player who's probably exceeded what they thought his potential was. Alexei Protas, using all 6'6", using his skating, using his speed. So they've had upgrades there. The defense has gotten better by having Chikrin in the lineup for the 8 games, force other players to play less. Rather than Faravari being John Carlson's partner every night, it was Jacob Chikrin, and they look excellent together. Faravari would go down, and he plays with Matt Roy. That's going to be a great defensive complement. The goaltending last year, you know, it was a tough year for Darcy Kuemper. I love the guy, but it was a tough year. The team didn't seem like they played as well. This year, what do we got? Logan Thompson at 5-0 already. I think it's 5-0. And when you look at that, just a lot of competent pieces that they added to the lineup. The fourth line wasn't enough last year. This year, the fourth line has been tracking very well. And the players on the penalty kill, excellent. But the 5-on-5 game, when it's as polished as it is right now, they can play any style of hockey. I think Tom Wilson's back to being a very formidable player, and he's fitting perfectly well with Dubois. They're both 6'4". Physique-wise, they look like the exact same guy. They're both jacked, they're big, and they're dominating inside the offensive zone as far as controlling the puck. Dubois, even yesterday against Carolina, who was in your face all game, he was bodying and shouldering guys off the puck all game long. And another thing with Dubois, he's not in Winnipeg, he's not in Toronto, he's not in Calgary, Vancouver, Edmonton. He doesn't take a beating in the media if he makes a bad pass here. So, you know, they're not under the microscope. They can live their lives. There's good and bad with that, but I prefer, and I think that's why the American teams have won the Stanley Cup for so long. Since the internet started, the players aren't being hounded all day. You can live
it. Don't you blame us.
I went home. I took my 20-year-old son to Edmonton last year for the Stanley Cup Finals. I said, you want to see what real playoff hockey is? He was in Vegas with me when the Capitals won the Cup. We sat in a box with Gary Bettman and Bill Daly every game in Edmonton. And that cash register that they have in Edmonton, the 50-50 was like $25 million a night. People were the games, the people were lining up at 2 p.m. out front of the arena, and after the game until midnight, everyone was just going crazy. So it's a hockey mad country. I don't blame it. I hope a Canadian team wins soon. And I think it would be absolutely amazing. And that whoever, if Toronto ever wins it again in our lifetime, whoever wins it on that team is a legend forever. Whoever the coach is, whoever the general manager is, it'll be incredible for hockey. And hopefully it won't have to be 50 or so years till it happens again. But I'm not blaming the media. I'm just looking at it's a lot easier to play hockey in the United States as a National Hockey League player.
Alan, great job as always, man. Thanks for doing this.
Hey, all right, stay safe tomorrow. Good luck.
Yep.
He's the other May Day.
I believe he's in D.C. on November 5th tomorrow.
What's happening tomorrow?
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah.
Something. Large election.
Yeah.
That was a lot of information. Chris Patrick is the GM there, by the way. That's the name I forgot. I have a question for you. Do we have time?
Yeah.
I know. And not to disrespect Chris Patrick, but, like, it's hard when you've got, like, these presidents and these bigger names that you still know probably are
big input
pulling the majority of the strings.
Yeah. So this Ovechkin record thing.
Yeah.
And how do you think fans and the NHL are going to receive and promote this?
You can't help but be sensitive of the political landscape out there. And I'm sure they have daily meetings on it, to be honest with you, on how to go about it.
Okay.
I don't know what that means. I have no idea what that means, but, you know, this is a guy that's been in the league a long time. Between himself and Crosby and a few others have really carried the mail for the league.
Mm-hmm.
And it needs to be well-respected, but I don't know what that means, to be quite honest with you.
He's as big a star as we have in hockey and have had. You know, what's hard is, you know, this guy has Putin on his Instagram page.
I don't know. I haven't checked lately. Has that changed at all? Has it not changed?
I haven't checked either, in fairness.
I don't know.
But I mean, like, if I'm not mistaken, I think Gretzky's Ukrainian. You know, like, I'm just saying that there is some tension about, they're not even allowed to be in the Four Nations face-off. You know, the Russians aren't. So I'm just curious if there's any sensitivity around promotion of this or not.
The answer is yes, and to what degree, we don't know.
Right.
The conversation around that part of it has certainly, you know, cooled, though.
Like, around the Russia-Ukraine part?
No, just around, like, the controversial part of it. Like, it was, when it first started, like, he was fielding questions about it in, like, press conferences, and there was the tension with the PR. Like, there was all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that just feels like it's taken a back seat to this, and I don't say that's the right thing. I'm just saying it's kind of the way the internet works, the way, like, our day-to-days work, that everybody moves on to the next thing.
But we're a long ways from the record here. So I feel like that's part of the cooling off. I mean, as Canadians feel one of Gretzky's big records going away, someone who, I don't know, is not...
Listen, I've never thought it was... At the end of the day, since 1972, they've been our biggest rival.
Right.
Right? Russia. Yep. Canada, Russia, Canada, Russia, sure. Canada, Russia.
So I just don't know that we're going to get Canadians standing on their seats.
Russians taking
David Ambrosi,
the greatest.
True.
Right? One of the greatest.
David Ambrosov?
Right? A rival, a Canadian rival, is taking one of the best records out there in hockey history away.
Yeah.
And that's where you come into play a little bit, right? With your emotions.
Yeah, listen, I don't want it, but I have come to grips with it. And,
I mean, he's the greatest goal scorer the league's ever seen.
Well, not yet.
No.
Well, but
he is.
Well, no, not yet.
Okay. Okay. By the
man
numbers.
With the man with the most goals is the greatest goal scorer.
Statistically speaking, you are correct.
But even not even on a point per game or goal per game basis.
Yeah. I just think it's a big, big story that's starting to sneak up on us quicker than I thought. How about May Day? The other May Day saying that they're stealing all the games from them late?
That's a nice little nugget.
I love that nugget.
Yeah. That ESPN and TNT.
ESPN should hire May and their crew for the game if they get the game.
Of course. I love that.
Just trying to muscle in, those big networks.
That's great. Good for ESPN. You should do.
Yes.
You spend billions on it. We want that one.
Yeah. That one's going to mean a lot.
All
right. Just like that, 2 hours in the books. Our thanks to Alan May moments ago and Frank Saravelli from dailyfaceoff.com. We're back tomorrow on The Real Kipper and Bourne Show. If you get a chance, give us a rating and review. We'd love to hear from you. Have a great night, everybody.